lovely members of the family of Mr. Joe Hassan, who will be delivering the hesped, who will be delivering the eulogy. I just want to say on a personal note, we heard the beautiful liturgy over the past 2 days ago on Yom Kippur. El Melech Yoshev al Kisei Rachamim Ominaheg Bachasidut. We heard this 26 times during the holiday of Kippur. And we all know it without looking in the Siddur, but its words have a special ring to them with regard to Mr. Joe Hassan of blessed memory. And although those words are echoing our prayer to God, to asking Him for forgiveness, El Melech Yoshev al Kisei Rachamim Umitnaheg Bahasidut means God, the great King, sits on his divine throne and He engages in acts of kindness. And if I look to a human being who we all loved very dearly, and I got to know him much better since I became a suegro of his grandson Victor married my daughter Marie, and my dear friends Rabbi David and Vicky Angel, also my suegros. Through them I got to know Mrs. Hassan and Joe Hassan, to que viva muchos años, Mrs. Hassan. But he was a remarkable human being. And God blessed him with tremendous mercy, with loving kindness. He survived one of the worst travesties in world history. He persevered in everything that he did with his life. And he's going to be missed by all of us, but the words are going to come from, the words about his life are going to come from his family members, who are very, very fitting that they should come from him, from them, and they're very capable. And all I want to say is to wish to Mrs. Hassan, to Denise, Vicky, Leah, Nate, and the entire family, our prayers and thoughts are with you. We loved him. He was an icon in this community, he was an icon in the community. Everybody knew him or knew of him. He had a big heart, and I thank you not only for giving me a wonderful son-in-law, but for bringing me closer to your family and having an opportunity to know him. The first speaker today to deliver the to deliver the eulogy will be Rabbi David Angel.
Thank you. Just before I begin my remarks, what I've been noticing the last few days since the news came out of my father-in-law's passing, people greet me, they call me, and they say, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And they have a tone of voice as if I'm the avel. And I have to tell you, I'm not an avel here, but I feel like an avel. Mr. Hassan was my father-in-law for close to 40 years. We spent a tremendous amount of time together, alone, quality time. We engaged in discussions, and the entire time, our entire relationship was marked by mutual respect. So I just wanted to say this before I begin my remarks on my father-in-law, Joe Hassan, and his remarkable life, as Rabbi Baron said. I just heard before the services from Victor Amira and Hazan Azos that my father-in-law is the last surviving male member of the class that survived the Holocaust, and now we don't have anybody left, male member, who is alive. And this not only marks a personal tragedy or family, it also marks a change of the guard. There's a new generation. And we have to look back and learn from the lives of our predecessors, and particularly my father-in-law, who I'm going to speak about in 1 minute. You can gain tremendous lessons from them. I remember many people like him when I was a young child growing up in this wonderful community. and it's a dying breed, or it's a breed that's really gone. And to the extent that we can pass on these values to our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, God willing, the world will be a better place. When I was contemplating my remarks on the life of my father-in-law, such a complicated life, such a vast life, my mind went to a story in the book of Judges, and a beautiful story it is. It's about one of our judges, Shimshon. Shimshon was a gibor. He was a very strong person, a very out there kind of person. One day he was walking on a path, and a lion attacked him. So what did he do? He killed the lion with his bare hands. He left the carcass there. He came back a week later, and he found in the carcass a honeycomb. So the bees were created a honeycomb inside the carcass of the lion. So he said, I'm going to make a riddle. And the riddle is as follows. He didn't tell anybody what he thought. He ate from the honey. He gave the honey to his parents. He didn't tell anybody what had happened. So what was the riddle that he made? He said, Me'az yatsa matok. From strength came out sweetness. And he asked this riddle around. And finally, the solution to the riddle was, what is stronger than a lion? And what is sweeter than honey? The exterior of a lion was very strong. But what fed the lion? What was the inside of the lion? The inside of the lion was honey. So I want to say, this analogy applies to my father-in-law, Joe Hansen, who is stronger than a lion and sweeter than honey. His life began in the island of Rhodes in 1920, January of 1920. I know January because every year we fly from New York for a celebrated birthday without fail. And my mother-in-law also is in January, by the way. His father and mother, I have to say a word about them because they perished in the Holocaust. It was Nathan and Ventura Hansen. My grandfather-in-law, Nathan Hansen, had a dry goods store in Rhodes. And he was also a chazan, volunteer chazan, in a small synagogue in the island of Rhodes. Ventura was from the Hannon family, and she was apparently quite educated from the conversations I had with my father-in-law. We don't have any pictures of her, so we don't even know what she looked like. We had a brother, Victor, younger brother, and Luna was a sister. Victor also perished in the Holocaust. Since they were murdered brutally, and they were never eulogized publicly, so let's put a closure to this story. And spend a moment in silent respect of Nathan and Ventura Hansen and Victor Hansen. There's a story when Victor was selected for murder by the Nazis. My father-in-law was so sad because Victor had a small stature, but he was very strong. He was a very strong person, but he didn't make the cut during the selection. So he had fashioned a spoon, Victor had fashioned a spoon out of tin so he could eat his soup. And he gave it to his brother, Joseph, and he said, here's a spoon, Joe, and we'll meet together after the war in Rome. My father-in-law cherished the story, and that was his last memory of his brother, And he loved it, my father-in-law loved it, by the fact that we have two sons, one named Victor and one named Joseph. So he was always happy about that, that connection. Don't ask me how my father-in-law survived. It was the story after story after story of near-death experiences. And I've heard these many times over. When the war was ending, and he was extremely weak, he told me he weighed about 80 pounds. And he said he was on his deathbed at that moment. And he had a vision. And the vision was, he was breathing out of a straw. And he had heard this vision from many, many other inmates in the concentration camps. And the story was, once the straw breaks, then your soul goes out of your body, then you're dead. You lose your life at that point. So he said, I was breathing through that straw, and I got liberated. It was by a miracle that he survived. Me'az yasa matos. From something so horrible as the Holocaust came out this beautiful sweetness. Who would have thought at that particular moment, seeing this emaciated young man, that he would get healthy, immigrate to the United States, find a beautiful girl to marry, beautiful Jewish girl? Who would have thought that? It's a miracle. Me'az yasa matos. From the bitterness, from the strength of the Holocaust, came out something very sweet. He met Bertha, my mother-in-law, Bertha Soriano at the time, and Bertha Hassan for the last 59 years, correct? 59 years is a very long time to stay together. It's beautiful. They produce children who, in my opinion, are just amazing people. I'm particularly partial to one of them. But we'll not go into that right at this moment. So I'm just going to mention their names. Before I veer off from my mother-in-law, I just want to say, Mom, you really breathed life into Dad. You're just such a wonderful woman. And the whole family takes strength in your good attitude, your humility, your quick wit, your humor. We just appreciate you very much. May you live to 120. Thank you. See that? That's exactly what I meant. Not only do we have the children, which I will mention by name, Denise, my beautiful wife, Vicky, Leah, and Nathan, who everybody knows. He also had, how many children? Four children? How many grandchildren? 14 grandchildren. I think it's also 14, and a couple more on the way. B'sha'a tova. Again, miraculous. Me'az yasa matos. From the ashes, from utter destruction, came out something very sweet. A beautiful family. And I want to say something else about the actual character of my father-in-law. And that is, I believe the same feeling or the same idea. What is stronger than a lion and what is sweeter than honey? It applies to him himself. He had a very strong exterior. And nobody knew exactly what he was thinking. However, all of his actions, 100% of them, in the most virile and thought-out way, were for the betterment of his own family,
for the love of his wife, the love of his children, the love of his grandchildren, the love of his great-grandchildren. Nothing would bring him greater joy than activities with the children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And one more thing I will tell you as a son-in-law. As we sat together, I noticed he was not ambiguous about what he wanted. He would tell you. There was no question about it. However, this was a veneer. This was a facade. He had the strength of the lion and the insides of honey. Dad, we're going to miss you. We know who you were. We appreciated it. You fostered love and loyalty in all of your children and grandchildren. And you will be dearly, dearly missed. Indeed, what is stronger than a lion and sweeter than honey? Shetehe nishmato zera b'yisora ha'chayim.
Thank you. Those are very beautiful and moving words that remind me of before Tisha B'Av. We read 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av. We have the Tilata Dipurayinotah. We have 3 weeks of Haftarot that bring sadness and tears to us. And then we have 7 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, in which all of the Haftarot give us, uplift us, and give us hope. And I liken your words to what you did. Very inspirational and moving and fitting. The next speaker will be Rabbi Angel's wife, Vicki, Mr. Hassan's middle daughter.
Thank you all for coming to honor my father's wife today. You really honor us with your presence. It is my feeling that every time a Holocaust survivor departs this world, a new star is born in heaven, and the light here on earth dims for just a moment. If our lives are a story, a narrative with a single thread, I have spent much of my life trying to read my father, to unravel his plot, to parse the experiences of his life, and interpret its themes and motifs. From his idyllic childhood in the vibrant Sephardic community of Rodez, to the debilitating trauma he suffered in the Holocaust, losing his dear parents and dear little brother, to his marriage to my beautiful mother, the angel who blew life back into him and helped him build a family who were his true and ultimate victory and joy in this world. My father was a very complicated man and unable to express himself easily. Yet, without words, in his silence, he communicated to his family so eloquently and so profoundly. I have written many poems in search of my father's story, and now I'd like to share with you just a few. This one is called One Last Joyous Act of Freedom, and it takes place as he was arrested by the Nazis. They are scrambling this way and that, their coats all flying, scarves streaming out behind them, their heads bobbing up and down like pigeons on the piazza. Some faces are pressed to the ground, some faces fresh to the sky, where my father is framed in the second story open window. His arms outstretched as he releases lira, millions of lira, free, free money, his mother's inheritance, airborne, fluttering down like ticker tape in breathtaking renegade rodents. My father's body is trembling with laughter at the half-crazed crowd below him, spinning and whirring, dizzy, some falling to their knees as if they were dying, as if they were praying. The teller at the bank where my father keeps his small account calls up to him. Giuseppe, Giuseppe, his eyes targeting my father, who is slowly turning from the wild window, his pockets now empty, his hand raised, waving farewell, my countrymen, arrivederci, as he turns to the commandant, who calls out his name from a ledger, he calls Giuseppe Hassan. My father is grinning. He thinks he has nothing left they can take from him. Not one solitary lira. Only his mother's gold ring hiding in a stocking, chasing his heel, and which later, at some yet unimaginable moment, he'll swap deep in the countryside of Poland for a small loaf of black bread that might just save his rich, rich life. And this is called the confession. Bag of bones, skull perched on wire, my 85 pounds, end of the war father. Can't stand, he can't stand, can barely stand up or bend to this bone tucked in tight to the barbed wire. He's seen them piled high as houses, femurs, fibulas, knees knocked loose on flatbed trucks. He can't stand, can barely bend to the rootless ground, the bone gleaming, pearl in the raw night air. He unearths it, examines it so carefully, its scattered pocks and bits of fraying cartilage. Then he falls on it, sucks and pulls the golden broth from the marrow, draws out every milky mineral from the petrified nectar. He can't stand, can barely move his useless legs and eyes, a freight train shuddering as he tells me every detail, some 60 years later with such bona fide sadness. How he couldn't stand, not quite stood for or under, couldn't know what kind of bone, what kind of animal does that, man with the bone clenched between his teeth all day, chewing, chewing, and the sheer wonder of it still clinging to his worn-out life. And now we have come to the end of my dad's personal story, so his legacy will live on. And what a fitting ending you have written us, Father. Departing this earth on winter floor, the gates of heaven flung open to gather in your holy soul. Rest in peace, dear Father.
Thank you, Vicky. I would like to now call upon Leia Nutek, the end of the story.
I stand before you today, humbled by your presence. Thank you for joining us in honoring our dear father. Please now allow me to reminisce a life, my dear father, Joseph Hassan's story. My father was a man of few words, and in respect to you, Dad, I will keep it short. Your young years were enveloped with love, culture, Sephardic heritage, and lots of good food. Ulemas, burekas, panderas, buikus, and pastelikus, to name just a few. My dad would take great joy in teaching my sister Vicky and I Sephardic cooking. He would frequently say, Linda, Vicky, in the old country you would form the borekas like this. And he would eagerly take a napkin to demonstrate how to form a pastelikus. He was so proud of the fact that his house in Rodez was attached to the Mahal Grande, and that he could hear the city loaf from his window, and how he could not miss a single prayer because his father would come to get him right away. My father took every opportunity to express to us the beauty that he had in Rodez and Shabbat meals and holiday meals with his beautiful large family in Rodez. His life was brutally changed in the Holocaust, losing his dear parents and beloved brother. Yet he managed to go on creating an amazing, caring, and loving family with my beautiful mother, Bertha Hafen, at his side, who is a true Asia Kyle, a woman of valor. She nurtured our father and gave him comfort, love, peace, and joy up to his very last moment on this earth. Mom, your role as a daughter, a mother, and Dad's wife has been a true inspiration to us all. As many of you know, my father truly loved Ezra Bezzetto, and it served as his haven in a fractured world. It was an honor for him to be a member. And then when he was able, he rose early in the morning to be the first one at Kahal to sing with his mommy. As he got older, I would urge him, Dad, save strength and go later to synagogue. And he always insisted that he be there early for the Yimrod. The day before he passed, Hazan Muna came to visit my father in the hospital. And my dad told him, Hazan, if my legs were carrying me, I would be in the synagogue for a few hours. He loved listening to the Sephardic tunes that brought him back to his life in Rodin. It is said in Kohelet, Tov Shem, Mishem and Tov. Beyom HaMavet, Miyom Yivalado. A good name is better than good oil, and the day of death is better than the day of birth. Dad, today we celebrate your life, your legacy, and your perseverance. To my siblings, Dee Dee, Vicky, and Nate, we are a true testament of Dad's love. May we give voice to the many unspoken words of his holy soul and continue to actualize his highest yearning. To my father's grandchildren, Rachel, Victor, Joey, Michael, and Aaron Angel, Leah and Alana Hassan, and my children, Yussi, David, Ari, Levi, Mimi, Shloimi, and Mushki Nesek. May you always remember that your grandfather was a righteous man and that he loved and cherished all the time he had with you. Please, I ask you today to carry Grandpa's torch of love for our people and our heritage, and his deep conviction and appreciation for life. Your grandfather represented a generation. Now it is your turn to represent. We are truly in the presence of a kadosh, a holy person. What a fitting way for a story to unfold. For such a man, his soul was taken by our Creator on the holiest and most auspicious day of the year, Yom Kippur. The Kol Nidre service started, and you were at peace to meet your Creator, Dad. May your zechut, the merit of your holy soul, protect the family and all those gathered here and everywhere in the world. As my father would commonly say in his last days of life, Oy, patron del mundo, Oy, master of the universe. As many of you know, my father was an avid golfer. In that spirit, Dad, let me just say this. May your drive be fulfilled in Gan Eden, and may everything be up to par. We always will cherish you dearly, Dad.
Thank you, Leah. I'd like to now call upon One of the granddaughters, Rachel Silfer.
When I think about Grandpa, I think of someone larger than life. Speaking about him here today, I am faced with the impossible task of memorializing someone who I thought would live forever. I think that says a lot about who Grandpa was as a person. There was a certain steadfastness to him, a tenacity that helped him persevere through unthinkable trials. But even as a prisoner in Auschwitz, Grandpa held on to a seed of life, a seed that he protected with all of his strength, as is with the foreknowledge that this is what we, the future generations, would need from him. And for this, we are all grateful. At our Passover Seder, Grandpa would sing Avadim Hayinu with gusto. He knew what it was like to be a slave. To be a slave means to be stripped of personhood, to be an object devoid of a self. But Grandpa, in a true act of creation, made meaning out of nothingness. I believe that act of creativity was intended for all our sake. And for this, we are grateful. Grandpa created a strong family with a powerful Jewish identity. And the strength of these values was passed on to his children and grandchildren and now to his great-grandchildren. What more merit can there be than in making something from nothing? And knowing the spark of life he saved for us would blossom and bloom and grow exponentially into the loving, strong Jewish family we have today. Like an artist with a blank canvas, you created a life, but not just for yourself. This canvas became the background, the matrix against which we constructed our own families. These values gave form to the content of our lives. This foundation is something generally unspoken, something unacknowledged and in the background. But you knew, you understood and provided. And for this, we are all grateful. As I was preparing for this trip, I was speaking to my children about their great grandpa. They were all filled with feelings of sadness and loving memories of our trips to visit in Seattle and his trip to visit us in New York. As we were speaking, my 10-year-old son David said, "I'd keep a face on his great grandpa," he would say, "I will miss you. I give you all the love from my heart. You lived a good life." Each child remembered something special about him. Some way they loved him or felt loved by him. Grandpa, under your rough exterior, we always knew that this love was there. You loved us, and this love was transmitted through the generations, from you to your children, from your children to your grandchildren, and now from your grandchildren to your great-grandchildren. I cannot think of a more meaningful or meritorious legacy than that. And for this, we are all grateful. Grandpa, we will miss you.
Thank you, Rachel. Sadia Nutek, the grandson. By the way, there are chairs here. If any of you would like to come in, please, to my right.
My younger brother, Levi, who was with me today, has been asking me to deliver these words on his behalf, expressing the sentiments of siblings. Before his passing, our forefather Yaakov blessed his son Yosef. Yaakov refers to Yosef as the shepherd of the stone of Israel. Yaakov likens Yosef to a shepherd and the Jewish nation to a stone. Yaakov recognized Yosef as the one who shepherded the remnants of Israel and ensured their survival among the nations. Yosef is the shepherd of Israel who ensures the survival of the Jewish people, who are compared to a stone which lasts forever. Like our forefather Yosef, who suffered confinement in Egypt, our Yosef, Yosef Natan, our grandfather, suffered the horrors of the Holocaust. Our sages saved the Jewish people, that wherever they go, they become princes for their masters. It was through our forefather Yosef, who became the viceroy in Egypt, that this promise was fulfilled. And it is through Grandpa that this promise lives on until this day. Grandpa emerged from the depths of despair, from the terrors of the Holocaust, as a prince, as the shepherd of Israel, who carried the awesome responsibility of ensuring the continued existence of God's nation. Grandpa jealously guarded our sacred tradition with all the passion of the ones who came before us. He rose from the ashes and professed his love for God. He professed his love for God by calling to him from the depths. He professed his love for God by establishing a family dedicated to Torah and his book. He professed his love for God by never faltering in his belief in God, whose kindness never ends and whose mercies are never exhausted. Chasdei Hashem, kilo kamnu, kilo chadu rachamecha. Grandpa left this world on Yom Kippur. I remember sitting with Grandpa on Yom Kippur in synagogue every year, watching as he embraced the awesomeness of the day, singing each of the poems with great fervor and thirst for the living God. Grandpa would stand to sing the silly quote so loud and proudly, threatening to drown out the Chazan. The strength of his voice, the passion in his eyes, his sincerity in pouring his heart after God echoed through the ages. It spoke of the eternity of the Jewish people. As the shepherd of Israel, Grandpa raised his voice in prayer to the Almighty, proclaiming in the voice of 6 million people, "We are still here, we have endured." The greatest joys in Grandpa's life centered around his worship of God, together with his family and his community. Grandpa was so anxious every week to wake up early on Shabbat so that he could lead the Zinnerot in the synagogue, reading each psalm with such excitement. In synagogue, Grandpa would purchase kibbutzim so that one of his grandchildren could have the honor of carrying the sefer or receiving an aliyah. Grandpa experienced the greatest joy in seeing his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren carrying on our ancient tradition. It is through Grandpa's family, his wife, his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren that God's promise to Abraham is fulfilled. "I will make your offspring as numerous as the dust of the earth, which cannot be counted." Grandpa's children and grandchildren continue his legacy. We proclaim, as Grandpa did, "Shiviti Amonai Lenagdim Tamid Kinimini Baal Emor. I have set Hashem before me always, because he is at my right hand, I will not falter."
Thank you. So, yeah, I'd like to now call upon another granddaughter, Moshe Natik.
To say that my grandfather was a living hero would not be a cliche, rather a truth about the way he lived up until his last breath. I went to visit my grandfather in the hospital on Erev Yom Kippur, and I was fortunate enough to be able to be one of the last people to talk to him before his passing. I told him that all his grandchildren loved him and that he was the strongest man any of us had ever known. I told him that I was always so proud to have him as my grandpa, and he said simply, "Vice versa." Grandpa's life was about seeing his family and enjoying his grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He always kept a tally of how many descendants he had, and he would proudly recall the number on any occasion. While in the hospital, nurses would notice his Holocaust number, B7452, and say, "Is that what I think it is?" They were all so moved to be caring for a survivor. My grandfather's passing is not just a loss for our family or for this community, but rather a loss to the world. He had the will to survive and the will to rebuild a life that was shattered in the war. He chose my beautiful grandmother, and together they created an amazing family. Grandpa proudly showed the number tattooed on his arm. He saw it as a badge of honor to be a part of a holy and great nation. My grandfather's story is a vibrant one, and it will forever live on in his children, his grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. We exist because he survived. Admittedly, he was what we call a Buzak in Latino. He taught us how to stick up for ourselves, and I learned from a young age that half-ins don't get pushed around. I always blame my feistiness on my half-in side. Going to synagogue was just a fact of life for Grandpa. And even in his 91st year of life, he would still sing loudly and stand through the Amida. I love seeing him at our Shabbat table saying Kiddush along with my father, proudly showing that he knew every word without having to look in the birkon. He would sing the Pidmonim and lead us in Birkat HaMazon, and it was always inspiring coming from him. I always loved saying the Yakomimos in unison with him, our voices resonating together through the house. After the meal, he would retire to the couch to sit with his intimate next to love, and each of us would take turns sitting near him, knowing that we were lucky to have access to his brilliant mind, his beautiful heritage, and his rich history. He always smelled of the best cologne. When I kissed his cheeks, I would taste his aftershave on my lips for hours. He had a golf swing like no other and a passion for all things sports. Grandpa was a very real person. Everything he said was genuine, whether you liked it or not. When he said, I love you, it was purposeful and meaningful, and we held on to it like gold in our hands. He was a symbol of perseverance and strength and the power of the human spirit. He taught me that tradition and connectivity with your Jewish history is essential to purpose in life, and that there is never an excuse not to partake in the beauty of your heritage. Coming from someone who lost his entire family merely because we were Jewish, what option does that give us? If Grandpa went to synagogue bright and early, how can we not? If Grandpa knew all the songs by heart, how could we not? If Grandpa says, El Dios grande, and always thanks God, how could we not? How lucky we are to be his grandchildren. I am honored to speak on behalf of my siblings and on behalf of all of the grandchildren. What we all know for sure is that our grandfather, Joseph Hassan, was a symbol of strength, of courage, of perseverance, and of survival. We love you, Grandpa.
Thank you, Mushki. It appears now that all the pieces of the puzzle have come together. And Saturday evening, Motza'ei Shabbat, Motza'ei Kippur, I heard a beautiful story from the family that one of the children asked their father for a blessing before too much time passed. And the pasuk that he quoted just from the top of his head is a bit obscure. You don't find people who know this pasuk from the Torah by heart, especially in a community where it's not recited every single day. And we know the blessing, we know the priestly blessing, Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha, Ya'er Adonai p'na v'lecha v'chunecha. We know this, many people know this blessing by heart. But the pasuk that came out of his mouth, beautiful, beautiful verse in the book of Genesis, V'yitein lecha ha'elohim mikal ha'shamayim u'mishmane ha'aretz v'rov dagan v'tirosh. Blessing his children that they should have everything that you need in this world to survive. Tal HaShemayim, dew from heaven. U'mishmane ha'aretz, and all that the land can give forth from the best of the land. Verov dagan v'tirosh, and that the land should give its vegetation. In other words, you should always have food on your table, money in your pockets, livelihood, parnasah, and health and happiness. And he knew it by heart. And I see now how he knew it by heart. His life in Rodez never left him. And from everything that he went through, his unshakable faith in Almighty God never left him. And when I hear the children and grandchildren, it's very clear that he passed on everything that he had in his neshama, his belief in God, and his values in life to his children. And Mrs. Hassan, you did breathe life into him, and you were the shining star in his life. And we had him for so many years, probably because of the wonderful wife and mother and grandmother that you are, and you should continue to be to your entire family. So these jewels that spoke today, no, it's the truth. I never exaggerate. The truth is that all these wonderful people that came up and spoke, your children and grandchildren, they will provide you comfort. And as I only know your family, to have smiles on their face and laughter in the voice, that's what you will continue to see from all of them and from all of us. May God bless you.